You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to a special interview in anticipation of the 2013 Just Food Conference. Just Food connects communities with the resources and support they need to make fresh, locally grown food accessible to all New Yorkers. Just Food also has a food justice program that increases awareness and action around food and farm issues and advances policies for a thriving local food system. The 2013 Just Food Conference will take place on Friday, March 29th and Saturday, March 30th. For more information and tickets, visit justfood.org.
Good afternoon and welcome. My name is Nathaniel Coburn, and today we are continuing our special series of guests in anticipation of the upcoming Just Food Conference on March 29th and 30th. Tickets are still available for both days of the conference, and there is a terrific lineup of speakers and workshops to suit your unique interests. You can visit www.justfood.org to get yours. Today I'm speaking with Beatrice Beckford. Beatrice is the Director of Organizing and Policy Initiatives for the Brooklyn Food Coalition, a grassroots organization composed of neighborhood-based and resource-based groups all working together in Brooklyn on projects that promote food justice and sustainable food. She'll be a presenter and facilitator in a workshop titled Setting an Anti-Racist Table. For more information about the Brooklyn Food Coalition and how you can get involved, visit www.brooklynfoodcoalition.org. Good afternoon, Beatrice. I'm glad you could join us.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well,
thanks. Glad I could make it.
It's a lovely snowy Thursday. I'm not sure how else to do this, but to dive right into it. What are anti-racism trainings, and why are they necessary for people working in food justice and food security issues?
Well, so I think what they really are the start of a conversation, like a much-needed conversation for folks coming in at the issue from various issues, from various perspectives. And so I think that in our day-to-day lives and in the organizations that we're all a part of and, you know, in the various circles that we all, you know, exist in, it's not a conversation that we see come up very often, but it's an issue that we are all impacted by in a number of ways, and obviously some more so than others. And so unless we have, you know, real spaces that create in a safe basis for that dialogue to happen, we can't take action in our own personal lives, and we can't move that action to, you know, essentially undo the damage that's been caused by systemic racism for years. So I think what we're really doing in these workshops is creating a space for a safe conversation for people to really look at their own personal investment in this issue and, you know, how that impacts us all collectively.
That's fascinating. What does that translate into, though? Like, when, like, say, I'm going to participate in this workshop at the conference. What are some of the issues that come up when we're talking about race within food work?
Well, I think, you know, some of the common themes that come up when we have these conversations are, you know, how racism or institutional racism plays out in organizations doing social justice work. Or even organizations that are doing work from a service providing perspective, and how, you know, we move to not just provide services to marginalized communities, but we're really galvanizing them to action and self-determination so they can affect change with respect to issues that impact them, and it's not always just martyr-like relationships. And so I think that, you know, we're always particularly critical of, you know, organizations that are grounded in justice or social justice, or working specifically with marginalized communities, because we expect to hold them to a higher principle and a higher esteem when it comes to dealing with this issue. And so if they're not, you know, elevating the stories of the most marginalized community, if they're not, you know, creating spaces for people of color to advance into leadership positions within the organization, or they're not creating a space at the table when it comes to policy or organizing or any other work for those narratives and those stories to shape the conversation, to shape the action and the work that's done, then we're just not doing enough. And I think, you know, while there are a lot of well-meaning organizations and groups that want to do that work, that sometimes it's a struggle and it's hard to figure out the best practices and the strategies that accomplish those tasks, all while allowing people to feel within those spaces. Because when we're really talking anti-racism, we're also talking about the need to feel as a society. And so I think some of the common threads that come up are that, you know, how do we create social justice institutions that are grounded in those principles that heal us as a society, and that really accomplish, you know, the goals that so many of social justice organizations, and particularly food justice organizations, are aspiring to achieve.
What's the end game? With these types of trainings and workshops, what does this movement look like from an anti-racist perspective? For lack of a better word,
I think that we're still trying to figure that out. I think, you know, we can say that it's this utopian-esque society where everybody's, you know, respected and equal. But, you know, this system has existed for so long that there's really so much damage that needs to be undone. Mm-hmm. And I think that for the short-term end game, I guess I'll frame it that way, would be that we're looking at our institutions and, you know, implementing practices that are models for anti-racist organizations. Because when we take those actions in our own personal life, right, when we're in spaces that are deeply private or personal, and we're grounded in anti-racist and anti-oppressive principles, then we're doing work, right? Mm-hmm. When we bring those same practices and principles to our organizations and the groups that we're a part of, then we're doing work, and we're getting closer to creating models for organizations that are anti-racist and anti-oppressive, and ultimately the culmination of that creates a better and a more just society, not just a just food system, but a better society. And so it's not just looking at it from an institutional perspective. While, you know, racism historically has been grounded in institutions and individual behaviors, mm-hmm. but looking at how we all struggle, you know, people of color, non-people of color, struggle with the issue, and how we can find commonality and common ground through conversation and dialogue and action that move us closer to not just understanding each other, but implementing these principles across the board. So I think the end game is, you know, more broadly put, is getting closer to our humanity, and doing that by struggling with each other and moving towards action.
Absolutely. It seems like it's often easier to talk about problems like public health issues, you know, obesity, diabetes, and whatnot, in like a macro level. You know, like, it's easy to talk about demographics, but from what I understand, the Brooklyn Food Coalition's work is rooted in neighborhoods and partnerships with community groups. How do you engage people on an individual and personal level about these sorts of problems? Because it's a lot harder, right?
I mean, so ultimately our approach at the Brooklyn Food Coalition is really movement building. And so, you know, the way in which we engage individual community members and groups that exist within communities is really to kind of start the conversation there. We know that there are all these food systems issues and food justice issues, food sovereignty issues that exist, you know, in Brooklyn, in the city, in the country, in the world. But that it plays out very differently in the individual lives of people that live, you know, in Brooklyn and beyond, and even more so in communities. And so we really want to start the conversation there and engage people in the fact that we know the Farm Bill is, you know, is messed up. And how do we change that dynamic by identifying how the implementation of those types of policies play out in our communities, and how, you know, when we don't address race and class issues in policy or in our organizing efforts, that it plays out in our communities, not just in the physical layout of it, but in the racial and economic and public, you know, the very public health disparities that you discussed earlier. And so when we start the conversation there, we're able to say, you know, what are the issues that are facing you as a mother or you as a student? You know, you as a professional in your own personal life, how does that relate to your broader neighborhood or your broader community? How does that play out in Brooklyn? How does that play out in New York and in the country? And so we move people from you know, thinking of it at a micro level to a macro level, and are essentially moving them from being, you know, one person impacted by an issue to a community of people that are impacted by an issue. And as a result, we're able to come together and be stronger and really build people power to address those issues, because they're grounded in our personal experiences, in our stories, in our narratives, in our relationships, you know, with people in our neighborhoods and in our communities. And to us, that's the organizing, right? That's the work. Mm-hmm. That's what this country is built on, is people shaping and shifting, you know, public discourse. And so I think when we start the conversation there, you know, as it branches out, it gets stronger and it reaches more people at their core.
How did the Brooklyn Food Coalition begin? Tell us a little bit about the background of it and its mission and various programs.
Yeah, so the Brooklyn Food Coalition is actually not that old. I think we're going on maybe 4 years now, and people are always surprised when we say that. It started in the same fashion that I, you know, in the movement building fashion that I discussed earlier. You know, there was a small group of, you know, community members that were concerned about food access issues and quality of food issues that existed in their neighborhoods. Many of them were members of the co-op. Some felt as though, you know, it was unfortunate they'd have to go so far to get healthy, affordable food in their neighborhoods. You know, some were parents dealing with, you know, allergies and other types of issues in their families. And so they really wanted to do work around educating people on food issues. But we're also really inspired and excited about the fact that there was this kind of re-emerging food movement that was going on, and that people were paying more attention to the issues, and wanting to bring that here to Brooklyn, right, to have Brooklyn folks or real people connected to that. And so they decided to do an event that would bring people together to kind of talk about this in Brooklyn. And that's what essentially became the first Brooklyn Food Conference. It was entirely volunteer-led. You know, several hundred community members coming together to help plan this. And they were only expecting maybe, you know, a couple hundred people to come into the door. And over 3,000 people attended, 300 under the age of 18. And so, you know, with the energy that existed, you know, as a result of that first conference, you know, meetings continued to happen and the energy continued to build to the point where people were like, we need to keep this work going. And so the Brooklyn Food Coalition was created. And so from there, you know, we've been doing neighborhood organizing. We've been working on issues that our members feel as though are important, from school food to labor issues. And we continue to be grounded in, you know, the everyday individual's voice being catapulted to affect policy and systems changes, you know, that we believe will ultimately change the power dynamics that will change our food system. Mm-hmm.
Are there specific policies that the Brooklyn Food Coalition would like to see enacted on a local level, on a Brooklyn level, on a New York level? Like, what do you think of Bloomberg's soda ban? Is that something that the Brooklyn Food Coalition supports? Do you support top-down measures like that? Or are they the other piece of the puzzle that, I mean, obviously that's not your area necessarily, but what do you think about things like that?
Well, you know, I always, when people bring up the soda ban, I always find it really interesting because people are feeling like outraged because it affects their personal choice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm a huge Raj Patel fan. Anytime I can go and hear him speak or attend an event that he's lecturing at, I always go. And there was one time I was listening to him talk at an event, and he talked about choice and this kind of perception of choice, the illusion of choice that we have because of the way our food system plays out. And you go into a supermarket and you have, you know, thousands and thousands of different processed foods and, you know, hundreds of different types of sodas that you can get. And it creates the illusion of choice. And so I think the soda ban is an interesting kind of take on that, where people get really enraged at the fact that, you know, they feel like their personal choice is being taken from them as a result of this ban. While not looking at the broader issue that really speaks to why is soda so much cheaper than, you know, milk or, you know, these other things that you can get. Why is it cheaper to get a bag of chips than it is to get an apple, and really look at those issues as opposed to kind of this fighting for the illusion of choice. And so that's kind of my flat response to the soda ban stuff is that there's a bigger issue here. And that bigger issue is, you know, the fact that our government subsidizes bad food. And as a result, you know, it pushes out people that are, you know, farming sustainably and using, or growing these practices that are better for the people, and, you know, not just in the quality of food and the nutritional value that we're getting, but also for the people that grow, that, you know, work in the factories and the distribution centers, that are interfacing with our food every day as workers. It's we're just and equitable for them as well. Mm-hmm. And then it's better for our planet also. So I think the soda ban is a larger issue. Other policy stuff that is particularly important to us is obviously a better farm bill, because it's so much at the cost of what is wrong with our food system, and really creates a potential for what could be better in our food system. And then other pieces of legislation, like the Child Nutrition Reauthorization Bill that particularly governs school food, how we can improve upon that to, increase the quality of food that we're providing to our kids in schools. One of the things that we worked on through our school food reform work was a roadmap for healthy school food that, makes some recommendations with respect to local procurement and the amount of sweetened beverages we're giving children in schools, the quality of the food that we're giving to them, down to, plate waste and, styrofoam in schools and things like that. And that was adopted by Councilmember Brad Lander into a resolution. And so we've been doing a lot of work to educate people on that, so we can, push to have the city council pass the resolution and push the DOE to enact some of the recommendations. So, from a number of different fronts, we're trying to affect policy, but have it be grounded in the experiences of our members and, people that are, living here in the city.
I was going to ask. I wouldn't want you to speak for your membership exactly, but are these policies what you hear coming from the communities that you represent? Like, this is what we need to have, and how is that articulated, and how does that translate into your position?
We hear all kinds of stuff. Anything from folks wanting more, green spaces in their communities to grow food, and increase, the amount of fresh produce that's available in their communities, to, parents that just want better food on the menus for their kids' school. They don't want them, eating so much processed foods in the form of chicken nuggets and mozzarella sticks and, pizza every week. It's very simple requests that, you think would be, just simple, but when it comes to implementing, can be really complicated because we make it complicated. But it's parents who want their kids to be healthy, which should seem like a normal thing, but, when you have reports that come out that children are going to live shorter lives than their parents because of the obesity and, food-related illness epidemic, it's definitely a battle. It seems like it should be a simple thing to be able to have green spaces in your community where you can grow food, but it becomes a battle and something we have to fight for. Things that should be a basic right, a human right for us as community members, becomes an uphill battle. So it's a lot of those types of things, a lot of, food workers, restaurant workers that just want to be able to make a fair wage, a living wage, and to be treated with dignity and respect in the workplace. It's a simple thing that we make so complicated. And those are the things that are important to, many of our members, and many people that are, allies, to the coalition as well. So, simple things that we have to fight for that should just be.
Absolutely. They are hard things to argue against. You're absolutely right. Thank you so much for your thoughts and your time today, Beatrice. I'm personally very excited about participating in the workshop. Folks, stay tuned with us later this afternoon at 4 o'clock. I'll be interviewing Jane Hodge, Director of Farm School NYC. I want to thank you all for tuning into this program. This show, like all of the more than 30 shows featured on Heritage Radio Network, is available for free on their website, www.heritageradionetwork.com, which you would be listening to right now.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.